Why don't we open our Bibles to Exodus chapter 9, verse 13 today? Get ourselves refocused on plague number 7. So far, we've had water turned to blood, frogs, gnats, or lice perhaps, maybe mosquitoes. We've had flies, we've had cattle dying, we've had boils. And now God is going to bring a hailstorm like no one has ever seen in Egypt before. And so this is how this plague begins. Exodus 9:13. Then he who is said to Moses, rise up early in the morning, present yourself before Pharaoh. Now he's been doing this at the river, so perhaps that's where he does it again. Thus says he who is the God of the Hebrews, let my people go that they may serve me. For this time I will send all my plagues on you yourself and on your servants and your people, so that you may know that there is none like me in all the earth. So a little reminder that this is focused specifically on Pharaoh and those that belong to Pharaoh. Verse 15, for by now I could have put out my hand and struck you and your people with pestilence, and you would have been cut off from the earth. So God, through Moses, is going to let Pharaoh know God could have terminated Pharaoh a long time ago. So why is this being drawn out? Well, that's the point of verse 16. And it also helps us understand a little bit of why God, on a couple of occasions, hardens Pharaoh's heart. Now, the majority of the time in our text we've been reading, it's Pharaoh that hardens his own heart. But every once in a while, God hardens his heart to draw this whole plague thing out. Verse 16 of Exodus 9. But for this purpose I've raised you up, to show you my power, so that my name may be proclaimed in all the earth. So this is a demonstration that God is the only God. That all of the so-called gods of Egypt are powerless in the face of the true and living God. Now, the Egyptians are more than likely worshiping a bunch of fallen angels who are presenting themselves as if they were gods. They have been pulling a long con, on the Egyptian people, just like they've been playing the long con on a whole bunch of people around the world. But God wants Pharaoh to understand that there's nothing he or his gods can do to stop the true God. And it is intriguing that this verse is found in the book of Romans when this topic comes up of God's use of sovereign power. It's Romans chapter number 9, where God is actually talking through the Apostle Paul to explain how God can use the Israelis and then use the Gentiles, but is still open to using the Israelis again, because God is the one that knows how everything needs to play out the best. And so you see Exodus chapter 9, verse 16, quoted in Romans chapter 9, verse 17. It's followed up with verse 18. So then he has mercy on whomever he wills, and he hardens whomever he wills. So it's very clear that that's what Paul, through the power of the Holy Spirit, has on his heart when he's writing that particular part of the letter to the Romans. This story right here, that when God has a demonstration of his power in mind, it's going to be put out there. And so next thing we read back in our Exodus 9 passage, verse 17, you are still exalting yourself against my people and will not let them go. So God does hold Pharaoh responsible. Even though he's hardened his heart once up to this point, the majority of the time, it is Pharaoh's attitude that has refused to let the people go. So he is at fault. God is dragging it out to show his power over the supposed gods and goddesses of Egypt, but Pharaoh is definitely bearing responsibility here. Verse 18, behold, about this time tomorrow, so we're given about a 24-hour heads up, I will cause very heavy hail to fall, such as has never been in Egypt from the day it was founded until now. It doesn't rain in Egypt, except once in like a century or two, and it's very little when it does. So hail is going to be probably even more rare. So this is going to be a shocking event. Now, the hail that most of us have had to deal with is only a few ounces at the most. The largest hails that are on record are usually just shy of 2 pounds. I think there was a record one just slightly over 2 pounds. And those caused a lot of damage. In the book of Revelation, we are told that one of the plagues that God fires against the people who have taken the mark of the beast are hailstones of 100 Roman pounds. Now, that's roughly 75 of our English standard pounds. And so that's monstrous. And we know of other stories in the Bible where hail is thrown by God as an artillery weapon in fighting wars for his people. So that is exactly what we see here that's about to happen as the seventh plague. He is going to shoot down some major-sized hail. I'm guessing probably 2 pounds or more. And that is going to kill anyone outside that gets directly hit by it. And so that is why God directs Moses to give a warning. Verse 19, now therefore send, get your livestock, or as we would say, your remaining livestock, because in the fifth plague, the more free-ranging animals died from some sort of disease. So these remaining animals were the ones that were closer to home, probably the ones that were corralled up nearby. So now they're told, make sure you take all of your local livestock that you still have in with you, anything that you have in the field, into safe shelter for every man and beast that's in the field, that means out in the open, and is not brought home will die when the hail falls on them. And then whoever feared the word of he who is among the servants of Pharaoh hurried his slaves and his livestock into the houses. So instantly, some of the people who were in the court of Pharaoh, we're talking about the nobles, the ones that are high in Egyptian society, they scatter from the palace in order to get all of their people and their animal possessions under solid roofs because they take this seriously. But not all of them, apparently. Verse 21, but whoever did not pay attention to the word of he who is left his slaves and his livestock in the field. Then he who is said to Moses, and so this must be the next day, because we were told it'd be about 24 hours later. Stretch out your hand toward heaven, probably with the staff, so that it may hail on all the land of Egypt, on man and beast and every plant of the field in the land of Egypt. Now, the plants are going to be the specific target of this we'll talk about in a moment. So Moses stretched out his staff toward heaven, and he who is sent thunder and hail. So think of a monster thunder and lightning storm. There's probably a driving rain, but there's also huge hailstones that are coming down as well. And fire rained down to the earth. Now, some people think that that's literal balls of fire coming down. I am more of the opinion that we're talking about the lightning here. Lightning strikes are probably happening a lot as well. This is a monster storm like no one has ever seen before. And he who is rained hail upon the land of Egypt. There was hail and fire flashing continually in the midst of the hail. Very heavy hail, such as has never been seen in all the land of Egypt since it became a nation. The hail struck down everything that was in the field in all the land of Egypt, both man and beast. So anyone that was not undercover, they're in trouble. But it is the vegetation that gets the worst of it, because they can't come in undercover. The hail struck down every plant of the field and broke every tree of the field. So these hailstorms are shearing off some of the twigs. I mean, if it's really big hailstones, like we're talking about Revelation size hailstone, it might be shearing off major limbs and branches of these trees. And we're talking about the fruit trees. And all of those things are being heavily damaged, some of them absolutely outright destroyed. Verse 26, only in the land of Goshen, where the people of Israel were, was there no hail. So once again, we are reminded that God makes these plagues specific against Pharaoh and his people. The Israelis are immune to it. And if you were in the land of Goshen, I'm sure there was a terminal line where the hail storm ended, and perhaps a nice sunny sky was overhead. And wouldn't that have been quite the testimony of the power of He who is. Then Pharaoh sent and called Moses and Aaron. Now, this always intrigues me. And I want you to just have a little fun with me and imagine this presentation. Moses and Aaron are somewhere else. And Pharaoh sends somebody to go and get them in the middle of this storm. And apparently they are spared, or they've got some sort of heavy-duty umbrella. I don't know which. But they go and get Aaron and Moses to bring them back in front of Pharaoh. And you know, of course, that Aaron and Moses are exempt from this. And so the storm is raging all around them, but there is some sort of hole in the storm effect right over them as they come to the palace. And wouldn't that have been an interesting thing for the servants to tell Pharaoh about as they're watching Moses and Aaron approaching, and not anything, none of the rain, none of the lightning, none of the hail is getting anywhere near them. So now they're in. And Pharaoh said to them, "This time I've sinned." Now, that's a good start. That sounds like the beginning of a true confession, doesn't it? "He who is in the right, and I and my people are in the wrong." About what? About letting the Israelis go. Verse 28, "Plead with he who is." Now, remember, when we started all this, he was saying, I don't know who this Yahweh is. I don't know who this he who is guy is that you're talking about. And I'm not going to do anything that he tells me to do. Well, now he's willing to acknowledge that there is a powerful God named Yahweh, named he who is. And he is asking Moses and Aaron to pray for mercy on his behalf. For there has been enough of God's thunder and hail. I will let you go. You shall stay no longer. And Moses said to him, as soon as I have gone out of the city, I will stretch out my hands to he who is. The thunder will cease. There will be no more hail, so that you may know that the earth is he who is. And so we're going to have kind of a reverse of what I was just describing. Moses and Aaron are going to walk out of the palace. And they're going to walk away out of the city. And all along the way, the storm will be raging around them, but not touching them. And Pharaoh, if he cares to get up off his throne and come to the doorway, could have seen that as another evidence of God's supernatural ability. Verse 30, but as for you and your servants, I know that you do not yet fear he who is God. So Moses is already aware, because God has told him so, that the plagues are not done. There are still three more to go. And it is because Pharaoh's heart is hard, and God will, from time to time, keep it that way until the full effect of the judgment has fallen. Now, I told you earlier that the plants are the ones that suffered the most from this plague of hail. Verse 31 says, the flax, that's a plant that is used for making linen. The flax and the barley. Barley is a grain that is used for making bread. It's usually considered the less, lower grade bread. Barley is cheaper, therefore. It actually is harvested much earlier than wheat. And so the flax and the barley were struck down, for the barley was in the ear and the flax was in the bud. So these two plants were at the peak of their production life. Barley is typically ready for harvest right at the time of Passover. And you already know that we are within days of the very first Passover. So barley was fully ripened heads of grain. The flax produces blue flowers. It's a very beautiful plant. And that signals that it is now ready to be cut and used for making linen. And so these two things were at the peak of their production, and they are beaten down and destroyed by these massive hailstones. So the barley harvest and the flax harvest have both been lost. However, verse 32, the wheat and the emmer, emmer is also a type of wheat, were not struck down, for they are late in coming up. So the wheat harvest is about 7 weeks behind the barley harvest, which is why we've got barley associated with Passover and wheat harvest associated with Pentecost, and they're 7 weeks apart. So for the wheat of its different varieties, it's basically grass sticking up. There are no heads formed yet. It's just the stalks of the grass. And so they'll be knocked down, but they will eventually be able to recover for the most part and start producing heads. So that's what we're being told with this note, is that the barley harvest and the flax harvest were lost because of the hail. Not to even mention, all of the trees that lost branches and limbs and will have no production of fruit on those lost limbs. Verse 33. So Moses went out of the city from Pharaoh. He stretched out his hands to he who is, and the thunder and the hail ceased, and the rain no longer poured upon the earth. Now, again, I like to picture things in my mind. I like to use my imagination. If not Pharaoh, certainly a lot of Pharaoh's servants could look, have a line of sight on Moses out there in his little bubble of protection from the rain and the thunder and the lightning and the hail, raise his hand with the staff up into the sky, and immediately it stops. And that would have been very impressive. But we are told in verse 34, when Pharaoh saw that the rain and the hail and the thunder had ceased, he sinned again and hardened his heart, he and his servants. So the heart of Pharaoh was hardened, and he did not let the people go, just as he who is had spoken through Moses. So he goes back on what he said he would do. Chapter 10, eighth plague. Then he who is said to Moses, go into Pharaoh, for I have hardened his heart and the heart of his servants, that I may show these signs of mine among you, and that you may tell in the hearing of your son and of your grandson how I have dealt harshly with the Egyptians and what signs I have done among them, that you may know that I am he who is. So this is, I think, the second time now that we specifically hear God say, I hardened his heart to give more opportunity to demonstrate my power. Now, it's clear that it wouldn't take too much with Pharaoh, because he already has been hardening his heart so much. So it's just drawing out the inevitable here. So Moses and Aaron went back into Pharaoh, and they said to him, thus says he who is the God of the Hebrews, how long will you refuse to humble yourself before me? Let my people go that they may serve me. For if you refuse to let my people go, behold, tomorrow I will bring locusts into your country, and they shall cover the face of the land so that no one can see the land. And they shall eat what is left you after the hail, and they shall eat every tree of yours that grows in the field, and they shall fill your houses and the houses of all your servants and of all the Egyptians, as neither your fathers nor your grandfathers have seen from the day they came to earth, from the day they came on earth to this day. And then he turned out and went from Pharaoh. So Moses just boom, boom. He and Aaron come in, just tell him the facts. Say, you won't break, you won't humble yourself. Even without God hardening you, you still would ultimately not bend the knee to God, because you're not bending your heart to him. So, next plague announcement, locusts. Locusts like you've never seen, like no one's ever seen. Going to come in, and they will devour all the remaining agricultural products. So Pharaoh's servants said to him, verse 7, they're kind of panic mode here. How long shall this man be a snare to us? Let the men go that they may serve he who is their God. Do you not yet understand that Egypt is ruined? So that's his counsel. That's the people around him. The leadership are saying, you got to let these people go. We are toast. We are done. The economy is wrecked. It's going to take a lot to recover from this year, the beginning of this year, with the agriculture being hit so hard and the livestock being hit so hard. Verse number 8. So Moses and Aaron were brought back to Pharaoh, and he said to them, go, serve he who is your God. But which ones are going? And Moses said, we will go with our young and our old. We will go with our sons and our daughters and with our flocks and herds, for we must hold a feast to he who is. So he says, everybody's going. This is a everybody must come and worship God moment. But he said to them, he who is be with you if ever I let you and your little ones go. So that's interesting. He actually turns around and uses the name of God in a, there's no way in the world I'm going to let that happen. Look, you have some evil purpose in your mind. No. Go, the men among you, serve he who is, for that is what you are asking. And they were driven out from Pharaoh's presence. So Pharaoh basically says, I am not going to let all of you go because I think you'll all disappear, which they're going to, but they're going to do that anyway. That's God's plan all along. He says, I'll let just the men among you go. That's it. That's all you need. You guys go and worship your God, kill your animals, whatever it is you need to do, and then come back here to be with your families and with your stuff. But I am not going to let you go. Now get out of my presence. And he apparently has them a little bit roughed up on their way out. And so that is the signal for Moses and Aaron to begin the next plague. Verse 12, then he who is said to Moses, stretch out your hand over the land of Egypt for the locusts, so that they may come upon the land of Egypt and eat every plant in the land, all that the hail has left. And since we've run out of time, we're going to have to put a pin in it there and come back next time we have opportunity to get into the Word.